I'll pass it over to you, Mike. Thank you so much for being here.
Okay. Hi, everybody. My name's Mike. I'm alcoholic, and well, hopefully, I'll think of something to talk about today. I usually didn't ask for alcoholism, but I got it, and I started drinking. Oh, when I was 16, I got a job in a car, so I had a lot more access to alcohol than I did before that. I did some drinking before that. Before I started drinking, I was anti-drinking, and before I started smoking, I was anti-smoking, and I was a good kid who knew the rules and figured that good boys did the right thing. But when I started drinking, I had to adopt a new set of values because that wasn't allowed, and I wanted to do it more. And I always was so proud of how honest I was. I could not tell a lie, and when I, first got my first taste of alcohol when I was like 13 or 14, I started watering down the liquor cabinet, taking some of everything that the folks had, pouring it in a, mixing it in a mason jar, and then pouring water back in the bottles. And that's not real honest behavior, and it was awful, but it wasn't the point. Getting it in me was the point. My folks barely drank. They were people who had a liquor cabinet for in case company came over, because they just really didn't have a taste for it. At some point, I think there just was too much water in there, and was too hard to do. I had gotten into everything I could get into, and it seems like I must have taken some kind of a break until I was 16. But once I was 16 and I got a job in a car, I started drinking whenever I could. Although I would never do drugs until a guy offered me a joint. And then that's all I wanted to do was drink and smoke pot. I remember distinctly having the thought after I started smoking pot. I mean, like after the first time or two, I had the thought, boy, those idiots, they say that this stuff changes you, and it doesn't change me at all. And, my grades went from straight A's nearly to failing classes, dropping classes, and pulling strings to graduate early. I almost had to do another semester because I was screwing up so bad. I made a baby with a girl who was willing, and got a job in construction. I was supposed to go to college because everybody thought I was really smart, but I just couldn't see how I could afford to get drunk and high enough and to put gas in the car and to have that freedom that I had with my minimum wage job to do college. It sounded way too hard. And like I said, I got a girl pregnant, and then we had a baby and we got married. And as I started approaching 21, I was really, really paranoid about getting busted for grass. I was not a well-connected person, so I was always looking for it. And I decided to try just drinking instead. And I thought that I probably wouldn't be able to do that because to me, pot meant the Beatles, and it meant bongs, and it meant roach clips, and it meant long hair, and I had a whole image around it. But I found that it was easy to just drink instead. I was surprised how easy it was. As long as I was getting screwed up, that's all I needed. My wife didn't drink, and I guess she probably didn't like the fact that I drank all the time. She was not a very confrontational person. Anyway, took to drinking like a fish takes to water, and eventually my wife left. Well, actually, the police came and took her. She had tried leaving me before and found how miserable that was, so she decided to try and have me killed, which didn't work. The police caught her, and I'm being the victim because my life had gotten all turned upside down. I had a couple of kids to watch and, you know, to raise by myself, and a construction job, and and I was hurting. I was lonely. I was working so hard, and I was drinking all the time. And I was just trying to hang on to my sanity because I felt so hard put upon. But actually, you know, I couldn't help but realize that if you're going to get divorced, that's the way to do it, because I was still able to keep my kids and I was still able to keep my money. So we were able to get by, because she had done it wrong. I was able to maintain my house and keep the car running. But I felt sorry for myself. I was just miserable sorry for myself. And occasionally when it got bad, I would go into my basement where I had a little room set up. And at first, the idea was to drink until I felt better. And then it became, that's not going to work. Drink until I didn't hurt. And then that wasn't working. So it was drink until I passed out. And then maybe in the morning it would be tolerable. So that's the state of mind I was in. Suicidal. I wanted to die so bad, but I did not want to do that to my kids. And I couldn't figure out how to manage it. How am I going to kill myself and not destroy their lives? Because who's gonna take care of them? What, their mom? You know. So I was just kind of hoping it would happen. You know, it wouldn't be right to do it, but maybe it'll just happen to me. And I was kind of hoping for that. And then one day when I was 27, my kids were, I think, 4 and 7. I was reading them a story before bed, and I had been drinking all day that day. I was reading them Lord of the Rings as a bedtime story, and they weren't behaving. They weren't sitting still, and I was trying to read, and I got angry, and I couldn't get them to settle down, and I remember putting them to bed angry. I was just angry and drunk and angry. And the next morning I woke up and I felt like a monster. Remembering the night before, how drunk I was, how helpless those little boys were, and how, you know, they were living in a house, just those two little kids and me. And I just felt awful for them. And I remember, and I got a flash of my whole adult drinking life, time. I had told myself that drinking was good for me, that it made me feel better, and that there was no harm in what I was doing. And that morning, I looked like a drunk. I looked like a drunk that, how did I miss it? And I also thought I wasn't fooling anybody else, that everybody else was watching this while I was oblivious to the fact that I had really turned into a pathetic human being. And I had this idea that maybe I should go to Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I didn't think it was a great idea, but it was the only idea I had. And I felt like I was in a hurry because I knew two things for sure. I knew that I could not live like this anymore. I could not stand being the person I had turned into. And I knew that I couldn't stop drinking either. And I was just in a corner. There was nowhere that there was no good answer, and the only hope was to track down an AA meeting. And I called my little brother to babysit, and I went to an AA meeting. And the guys there, they told me their stories, and you know, they asked if anybody was first meeting, and I said, my name is Mike and I'm an alcoholic. And I just hardly choked it out, but it was an important moment, admitting that out loud in front of witnesses. And, you know, they told me their stories, and I felt hope. I really felt hope. I felt like I might be okay after all. These guys, they seem to have alcoholism. They seem to be happy. They seem to be sober. It seemed like it could work. And the feeling I had, the fear I had that morning, I wasn't experiencing it in that meeting. I was feeling way better. After that meeting, a guy took me to half of another meeting. And then we went back to the place I went first, and I went to half of that, and then I excused myself because I figured I needed to get back to my kids. And I threw half a gallon of gin down the drain. I did not think I was going to need it anymore. And the beer, I decided I would give that to my friend when I saw him next week. Because that the seal wasn't open. You can't drive with an open seal. It's illegal. So the gin had to go down the drain. But alcohol, I thought, was precious stuff and should not be wasted. So I was going to bring it to a good home. Which I did. And I don't know if it was the next day or the day after that, but I went to another meeting, and then I went to another one and another one and another one. I kept going because I kept wanting to drink, and I kept feeling better at the meetings. Regardless of how screwed up I felt all day, when I got to the meetings, it would get better. I'd be okay. And as I heard them tell their stories, and I told mine, I would get these thoughts that turned out to be really, really common for alcoholics. These ideas that, you know, and I don't think I really have alcoholism. I don't think a drink will hurt me. Maybe I can drink and come here and I'll still feel better, you know, and I'll get to drink. I had a lot of thoughts that were thoughts that would have gotten me drunk had I not had somebody to talk them over with and find out that those are alcoholic thoughts. That's why we're sitting in meetings hanging on to each other so hard. Because when people who have what I have try to stop drinking, the first thing we do is start drinking. And But somehow together, we were able to break the cycle. You know, somehow by talking to each other, I could see what I had a little clearer. And I knew that it was stupid for anybody else in that room to drink. You know, it was obviously it would be stupid for any of them to drink. And I was sitting in there, and somehow I was able to see myself that I could probably be stupid for me to drink too. Because these guys had experience. They had tried drinking again, you know. They had picked it up again, and they told me what happened. And they told me how it went. And but it only kind of lasts for a little while. I likened it to filling my gas tank up. It didn't matter how full I made the tank, I was eventually going to have to go back to the gas station again. And that's how AA kind of works with me, is I only get so much, you know, and then I have to go get some more. I was just, let me say that at the very first AA meeting I went to, when it was finished, they all got up and they stood in a circle and they said the Lord's Prayer, which I knew because I had been a Catholic when I was a kid. And my first thought is, oh, what is this? And my next thought is, oh, what the fuck, humor them. You know, if this is what they want to do, I'll be polite. I'll be nice. And I kind of did approach the religiosity like that, that there's no reason to be rude, especially when, as time went on and I started telling these people, you know, I don't believe in God. I think he's like Santa Claus. I think that's all make-believe. And they told me, we don't care. Just keep coming back. We're here about not drinking, not about that. So it was a good group of people. If it had been a bunch of religious zealots, I don't know that I would be sober. But they were really good people who kept accepting me just the way I was, and kept holding out hope that one day I would find God, you know. But I, you know, the more I look at the God idea, the more silly it looks to me. But I did have to ask myself the question, why do they like that idea so much? And I don't know that I had a satisfactory answer. I don't think I still do. But they were doing stuff, even if they were doing it for the wrong reason, they were doing stuff based on this ideology. They were doing introspection and meditation and reflection, contemplation, you know. They were talking to themselves. They were doing things that I could do even though there's really no God out there. So I thought, well, I don't know what's important here, so I better not throw out anything that I need, you know, because I kept wanting to drink, you know. I would stay sober, and I haven't had a drink since my first meeting, but I have almost drank a lot since my first meeting. And it was the people in AA that made it so I didn't have to. I had terrible compulsions. I remember sitting in my bedroom where there's an analog clock with a second hand on it, and I couldn't stand it any longer. And I gave myself five minutes before I got in the car and drove to town to get something to drink. And I watched that second hand go around for 5 minutes. I just stared at it and watched it go around and waited. And then when 5 minutes passed, I said, five more. And I waited, and I watched the second hand go around again. And And somebody knocked on the door or the phone rang and that train of thought got derailed. And I forgot that I needed to drink and I didn't have to. So there was another time when I was in my house. I had been to a meeting, a noon meeting that day, and I had gotten home. There I was, home with my kids in my house, and oh, guess what? I need to go get some beer. So I start rounding up the kids, figure finding my keys, getting ready to go get some beer. I did not ask myself why I was out of beer, which was weird because I was never out of beer. I wouldn't let that happen. And I was just going to get some. That's all, nothing more. And as I was getting the keys and the kids and stuff together, I had this memory that I was at a meeting earlier that day. And it was a real, real kind of quiet little thing. You were at a meeting today. What was that? And I started remembering that I was at the memory of my alcoholism came back. It was the scariest thing to me because I didn't know. At that moment, I didn't know. I had forgotten completely. But I also didn't have any alcohol in the house. You know, I would have had to go get it, and I had time to remember, which was important for me. That's why I like to not hang around it too close, because it can happen so quick to me that if it's within reach, I might not remember in time. But if I have to go get it or I have to go find it, I might be able to remember before I get there. Anyway, you guys all know that stuff. You guys probably had the same story. Anyway, where are we at? Let's see. Well, I kept going to the meetings when the kids were in school. That was best. When I had to bring them, they tended to fight and make noise at the meetings, and I was just on the edge of my seat trying to make them behave at the meetings, get something out of the meeting, not disrupt it for everybody else. They did not like it. But I guess I was putting myself first. I was like, I think I have to be here. You know, I really asked myself, is it the right thing for me to be here? Because I'm disrupting this meeting when I come here. And I just couldn't see any other way of hanging on to my sobriety. I started going out to eat and out to coffee with people after the meetings. I started to have a social life. It was wonderful. I had never had that. I was in mixed groups. I was in groups that some of the people in the group were women. That was cool. You know, I was hardly ever in the same room with a woman, and I like girls. I still do. And I was able to socialize with them, and it didn't have to be a dating thing. You know, that was new to me. I had no experience with that stuff. I went to conferences, and I'd be in these hotels where there were all kinds of people came from all over to stay sober together and celebrate. And I would just feel wonderful at them and afterwards. But I was, I was frustrated because I knew that I can do math, and I couldn't be the only atheist out there with alcoholism. And I was sober, so you can stay sober and be an atheist. So there must be other atheists out there with alcoholism. How come they're never saying anything at the meetings? How come I can't find any of them? There must be out there. And I started to get the idea that they couldn't stand the religion. That there weren't anybody like me at these meetings because they couldn't stand the religion. And that started making me angry at the people, at, you know, when they would bring religion up. And I found that there were people, sober people out there on the internet that were in Alcoholics Anonymous, and they were sober, and they go, yes, me too. You know, and how wonderful is it to run into somebody who says, yes, I got that too. I'm like that. And you feel like you're not the only person in the world anymore like you are. And that was just thrilling to me. I had to find you guys. And I think the first secular meeting I ever went to, I'm almost certain the first secular meeting I ever went to was one that I started with the only other atheist in the whole Rockford area that I knew of. I wasn't about to start it alone because my understanding is you don't do AA alone. It's a team effort. So I had to have a partner. And so we started a meeting. And I really thought, based on what people were saying at the meetings, that there was going to be a lot of people out there who would just be, thank goodness you guys are here. You know, we've been putting up with this religion for a long time. And it was, and it's always just barely hung on. But it's given meaning to my life. And then I found a meeting that was about an hour and a half away from me. And I drove there after work. And I got there early and I found the room. And there was, it was a room that was only part-time used by AA. So what you had to do, I found out, was get out tables and chairs. That's what the people at the facility said. You got to, you know, they put out chairs. So I put out tables and chairs. I put about three long tables out and some chairs around the table. And then the second person came to the meeting, somebody who had been there before. And she goes, what's this? This is not enough. And I thought, all right, what do you mean it's not enough? That's great. There's going to be so many people that, you know, there's going to be more than 10 people here. And they showed up and I was elated. I was just elated to be at a meeting somebody else had started up, and hear people say, I don't like the chapter to the agnostics either, you know, and things that I really hadn't had a place to talk about it and to commiserate about. And then COVID came, and thankfully a guy had gotten sober at our group who was young enough to know about Zoom, to know technology. And then I found you guys. I found you guys. I found Raynham Essex. I found London. I went to South Africa, Australia, Thailand. I was in heaven. Because there were, I got to see a lot of you guys, and I got to feel really not so helpless and alone. And I'm just delighted with us, you know, with our secular meetings. I'm really still surprised that we're so small. One thing I suspect is, well, let me back up. Many years, maybe 10 years before, even 15 years before we started the secular meeting, a guy who came to the group I went to said that there was a rational recovery meeting in Rockford, and these guys were trying to do it without God, and he didn't like the meeting. He said it sucked. But I perked up. I heard about this, you know, godless AA meeting, and I was like, oh, I want that. But I also didn't want to lose what I had. I was scared to death that if I got it wrong, I'd end up drunk and all would be lost. So I didn't work up the nerve and I didn't go. And I don't know what rational, you know, I don't know anything about rational recovery except that somebody had said it once and put it down, you know, as a bad thing. And I just didn't dare. My sobriety was tenuous at times. And I never know when a drink is going to seem like a good idea. I was at a wedding a week ago, and it was in my face. I wasn't craving it, but I was looking at it and I was fighting it off. And I was at a baseball game last night, and I was looking at it, you know. I really love the times when I am around alcohol and I don't even know I'm around alcohol, but that's not all the time. Sometimes I'm around it and it looks harmless and it looks fun and it looks good and it looks happy. And I think you guys have kept me from believing that lie, because for me, it was not fun or good or happy. But something about my disease tells me it is. And it's my own head talking to me, and it sounds like my friend. Seems like it's on my side, and it acts like it wants good things for me. And if I didn't have that going on, I might not need all the help I have to have just to hang on to sobriety. I'm glad most of the time that's not the case, but when I think about drinking, I tell on it. I tell you guys, I say, guess what? I was thinking about drinking again. And, you know, I generally get, I know I get that too, you know. But I'm afraid not to. I'm afraid if I don't tell you guys when I'm thinking about drinking, it's going to be my little secret. It's going to be, I don't need help. I'm bigger than that. I'm tougher than that. I'm smarter than that. I got it down now, you know. And I think that's a dangerous thought. I think that's where the idea of powerlessness is so helpful. It reminds me that I don't get to be the boss. I don't get to be the strong guy who has it all under control. Just come to me. I have all the answers, guys. You know, that's not the attitude I think that's going to keep me sober. I think acknowledging my weakness and just putting up with the fact that I got to be dependent on others, you know. One of the best things I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous was the bad news. The bad news was that if I don't want to have alcoholism, too bad for me, I got it anyway. And if I want it to go away, too bad for me, it ain't gonna. And if I don't want to have help, too bad for me, I got a choice between getting help or getting drunk. And I believe those things. I don't know them. I can't know them unless I pick up a drink and find out. But you guys have picked up a lot of drinks for me. I mean, you have. You come in and you say, it's no fun out there. It still doesn't work. And it doesn't matter that I'm watching people at the baseball game drinking and having fun. That's not what's going to happen to me. I'm going to end up divorced and homeless, ashamed of myself, broke. You know, it's not going to go good for me if I pick up a drink. And once I pick that drink up, I very likely am not going to be able to stop. I don't have to pick one up right now. But if I pick one up right now, the next one ain't going to be my choice, I don't think. I think it'll be an urgent necessity, and I don't want to have to live under that. I feel like I've talked long enough. I've heard my story already, and I'd be interested to hear what you guys have to say. Thanks.